Okay, hello, Denim Heads, and welcome to the 10th Hangout with the Sons of Selvage. This is a podcast where a group of friends get together to talk about denim, menswear, and related interests. We aim for this to be a fun and inclusive podcast where you feel like you're hanging out with longtime friends, but be warned, there's a bit of banter, cutting up, and explicit language. So this episode, we're going to have current interests. We'll have news. We're actually not going to do Q&A this time. Instead, we're going to do a discussion topic about what we don't like about this hobby. We've had you all comment on Instagram and give us your opinion, so it's sort of a bit like Q&A. As always, please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Please also follow us on Instagram at Sons of Selvage Podcast. And lastly, please message us with any questions you'd like us to discuss on a future episode. So before we get into current interests, let's quickly introduce ourselves. My name's David.
Hey, everyone. I'm Kevin.
Hi, guys. I'm Ilya.
Hey, you're right. I'm Andy.
Hey, everyone. Lex here.
And I'm slightly hungover Tom.
All right, cool. Let's jump into current interests. So I guess I will kick things off. Recently, I've relocated up to Cambridge from London. So getting a bit more green space and kind of access to the outdoors. And so I've recently gotten back into road biking, which is a long time hobby of mine, and trying to kind of get out for a ride every weekend. So my road bike's about 10 years old. I bought it when I lived in France. But yeah, it's been great to kind of get out and do rides, and just sort of get a bit of headspace and also some kind of, you know, access to the outdoors. But yeah, it's got me thinking a bit about what kind of bike should I get next? Because obviously you always need one more bike than you currently have. So I've been thinking a bit about getting a trail bike or a gravel bike, which is like the hot new thing. So yeah, I don't know if any of you guys ever get into any cycling.
Are you fully lycra'd up? Can I ask first?
I do. Yeah, I do. Obviously.
Nice and tight. Yeah. You have to.
Is it neon?
No, actually most of my kit's black, which is probably stupid because
disappointing.
Well, it's kind of funny actually, because road biking is sort of the opposite of our hobby, and that in road biking people really embrace neon pink and neon green because you can actually get seen by cars, whereas
don't
I
want to get
like,
smooshed.
Yeah, I had this whole thing about like murdered out all black kit, which is probably really stupid for cycling, but yeah, it's been pretty fun.
Yeah, I ride a gravel bike. I've got a Genesis Crota Fur. It's a pretty good bike.
Oh, nice.
So, but yeah, I also get lycra'd up as well. So, and I'm 40 now, so I'm properly in mammal territory, actually, especially with my lockdown belly.
Oh, man. Do you use Strava?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
I'm going to have to add you on there. It'd be cool to set up a Sons of Selvage pedal.
Oh, cycle club. Man.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. Yeah. Chris Hewitt, who does Hewitt Heritage Fabrics, he's a avid biker, and had this whole kind of carbon fiber frame, the little pedals that you clip into the special shoes with, and all sorts. Yeah, I was giving him some proper dodgy looks, trying to buy denim from him, and he's fully lycra'd up.
That's how you got to do it. Kevin, I guess you want to go next?
Yeah, so nothing much too exciting happened really since our last episode, but I guess like the one thing that has started now since we are recording this on the 2nd of May is, as you all know, hopefully listeners who listen in now, in previous episodes I've talked about the competition I'm taking part of, which is the Indigo Invitational. We're obviously in May now, so it's 7 months in. So yeah, my Momo tires are starting to look really nice now. But since it's May as well, they have launched, as I talked about last episode as well, they have launched a made to fate shirt and jacket version of the competition as well, which has started yesterday. So it's pretty exciting stuff. I've got a samurai shirt that I'm wearing for it. So I'll post that up on the Instagram so that our listeners can go and have a look. But yeah, pretty exciting. I wasn't initially going to take part because for me, it's really hard to wear a jacket or a shirt a whole year long. But it's just like for the fun of it, you know, I'm going to try and wear it as much as possible. It is a slightly heavier denim shirt. So it's like a 10-ounce denim shirt. So I can wear it as a as an overshirt or a light jacket as well during our very super cold winters here down under. So yeah, that's basically the exciting thing that's happening for me at the moment. What about you, Ilya?
So I've taken possession of the Flame Pandas, which I've ordered back in November last year. And I have to say, I'm really pleased with how they've come out. If anyone knows, when ordering something like an MTO, it's always a little bit a bit of a guessing game what you're actually going to get and how it's going to turn out, especially if that boot doesn't exist kind of out there. So I've received them, and just to remind listeners, they're an 8-inch combat boot, which almost looks like a paratroop boot that the US Army used to use. I've gone for a Marium natural leather for those, and I think I've really struck out with the leather that Penn chose for me. It's got a really nice color and variation in the grain, and I've posted some of the pictures up, but I guess I probably should post something up on the Sons of Selvage Instagram as well to show that. And yeah, I'm just currently breaking those in. The leather's quite stiff, so I've been wearing them in and around the office, and they're just about starting to bend to my will. So yeah, really, really happy with those.
Yeah, they look amazing. How did you go about choosing and interacting with Penn? Like, what's the process like?
So with Penn, it's all done via Instagram DMs. He doesn't have a website. So the ordering process is you send him a message and you say, look, I want this with this kind of leather. So yeah, I just kind of looked at his portfolio, shall we say, on his Instagram page and said, yep. I want this kind of leather, this kind of last, and Penn's quite good because he will lead you in the right direction. And if you might not necessarily know something, or if you decide to do something a little bit crazy, he might say, well, hold on a second. This is not really going to work with this kind of leather, with this kind of last, or this kind of boot. And he will say, how about you do this? Or, so there's a little bit of a guidance there, but at the same time, he leaves you to get the custom boot that you want, which is quite nice because some makers will just let you do anything, and then you get these crazy neon green leather boots, which are below the knee. And yeah, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, exactly.
So
David
yeah.
got too excited and turned his camera off.
he got upset at my neon neon green
getting,
comment.
He's getting changed into his Lycra.
Yeah, exactly.
So received those. Luckily, the sizing all works and everything like that. I kind of gave him three or four boots that I wear and the sizing of what I wear, and he just took it from there. He's got quite an experience of resoling boots, so he probably he knows what those boots are like and what kind of the sizing is like, so he's pretty skillful in that.
Yeah, sick.
Sounds like pretty easy process.
It was and then there's a little bit of a wait. He moved studios when I in the middle of the order that I placed, so there was a little bit of a delay. All in all, it was about 6 months.
David, I'm sorry.
David's just turned up in his neon green Type 3 Levi's and his cycling glasses.
Like black guys. Speed dealer.
Yeah. So.
just lean into it. That's what I say.
So we need this fit for the Instagram page.
I think it's technically an outfit, not a fit.
Yeah, not a fit pick. We'll go into that.
That'll come up later.
How about you, Andy? What have you been up to?
Got a couple points. I mean, no one really wants to hear about me being excited that the gyms are now open and I can now go back there. But
are you bending over?
Even bigger thighs.
Even bigger. Yeah, nothing. It's getting to the point that actually I'm concerned that a lot of my jeans won't fit around my gams anymore. So yeah, I've got a couple of fads or things going on. First one is my wife and I have just started watching Mayor of Easttown on Sky Atlantic. So I think it's like HBO Max over in the States, and I don't know how that will be available over in Australia, mate. Not fully aware on your streaming services and TV, but yeah, it's really, really cool mini-series starring Kate Winslet and Guy Pearce, and it's about this, it's a murder in a really small town in Pennsylvania. Like they nail the local accent. They have to do this really weird or kind of quite unique drawl called Delco. And yeah, because it's such a small one horse town, everyone knows each other. Kate Winslet is the local detective. A girl went missing the year beforehand who they never found out, and that's weighing over her. And then pretty much a year to the day, another young girl is found dead, murdered, and she's a single mother, and it's kind of all these different characters that tying in and how everyone's interconnected. And you know, like, it's one of these towns where it's so small, the biggest fish is pretty much the guy who owns a local Italian restaurant, and he thinks he can intimidate cops and stuff like that. It's really kind of gritty and quite downbeat, but yeah, definitely a really, really good watch.
It sounds a bit like Twin Peaks in the 1800s.
Well, no, it's set now.
Oh, it's current day. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's current day. Sorry, One Horse Town. Yeah, no, that might make it sound like that. But no, it's just one of these really small, rundown kind of towns where the industry's fallen out of it and everyone's kind of a bit on the breadline. But yeah, it's hasn't got any of the weirdness of Twin Peaks. It is very kind of down to earth. But yeah, no, it's super cool. We've got only two episodes deep. Next episode's on Monday, so it'll be already out by the time this comes out. If people kind of like the idea of a low-key, murder mystery, it's definitely something worth watching.
With the amount of episodes of Line of Duty that my girlfriend's watched, I'm not sure I should recommend any more crime dramas.
I think this is only like 7 episodes, mate.
Okay, cool.
This is just a nice short one. Well, that's my first. Lex, what about you, mate?
Well, I have, so I think I've mentioned it on here before, I've been doing my master's where I've been writing about denim, and I finally submitted it this week, which is good.
Woo-hoo! Congratulations, mate.
Yeah, cheers. I kind of feel every time it comes to me in this session, I have nothing interesting to say because I've basically spent the last 6 months writing, but it's finally over. Good. So basically it's, as I mentioned on here before, my main job is a lecturer. So I've been essentially getting my kind of lecturing qualifications. So I use as an excuse to write about denim and denim education, because denim, despite the like multi-million pound industry it is, there is very few places that actually teach it. There's obviously short courses, like Black Horse Lane do some short courses, and there's a jeans school in Amsterdam, I think one in Milan. But there isn't any dedicated degrees in denim. So London College of Fashion, where I work at, doesn't have any. Some of the other universities have like short courses and units, but no one actually focuses on it. So I basically spent the last 6 months writing about that, and just kind of writing, putting together a curriculum in denim to teach these like young fashion students how to actually design jeans properly, rather than just whenever they get to work with denim, just doing all this kind of absolutely bonkers unwearable stuff.
And what kind of thing does it cover? Just like, if you can give us an overview.
For me, the focus of how I wrote this kind of education, how I'd push it, is about learning from history. So it's about looking at kind of historical and vintage garments and trying to learn these kind of historic techniques and reinterpret them. And I think actually as part of the research, I spoke to Tom, and one of the things that Tom was saying was it's about why he loves denim. It's about the history of it and learning from the history. And I think that's something that kind of people forget, and certainly how it differs from, you know, the fashion world that I come from is in fashion, you can kind of do anything, and, you know, people kind of come up with these wild concepts. But I think if you were to start doing that as a denim designer, it just doesn't work. Whereas the brands that we like are the ones that take things that are really historical and tweak them, like Mr. Freedom, your Mr. Freedom jacket that you wear, Ilya, you know, it's taken a really classic design and just kind of twisting it. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the focus of, the focus of my work. So I am really happy that it's over and I no longer have to write.
Congratulations again, mate.
Thank you.
PhD
Thank
you. Next, mate.
Yeah.
You will actually be Dr. Denim.
Yeah. There is actually, I think Mohsin is putting together a doctorate in a PhD in denim, but I think I've done enough writing for now. But maybe one day I'll be an actual Dr. Denim. That'd be my actual title.
Is there a doctor over here?
Yeah.
Yes. Denim.
Yeah. I've got a crotch blowout.
100% cotton thread. Stat.
At least he can work with needles, you know.
Yep, that's true. Let's just sew people back together on the machine.
Yeah, it'd be a bit raw. Someone's got like a big gash on their arm and you sashiko stitch it. So I don't think that's how stitching works.
Use a union special so they get some sick roping on their wounds.
I think sashiko does translate to little stabs in Japanese, so there's a bit malicious there.
There we go. Anyway, that's me. Hungover Tom, what about you? How's your week been?
A bit hungover. To be honest, I've not been up to a lot working. All the interesting people that I get to speak to over the phones. Someone pretty much insinuating that because our company only does 1 month statements and not 3 month statements, that we cause poverty and homelessness in people, which was quite funny.
Nice.
Yeah, people are just such a joy to talk to. it's absolutely, you know, and they're saying, you know, why is everything getting expensive? Do I look like an economist? I don't think I'd be answering the phone to you if I was.
I feel like that kind of customer, you should just refer them back to EDF or something like that. It's like, just go back to Big Energy.
Yeah. And actually had like quite a pleasant chat with someone who I recognized his name and kind of recognized his voice a little bit. And I was like, oh, did you used to live in Bromley? He's like, yeah. It's like, did you go to Langley Park? Boys school? He was like, yeah. I was like, oh shit, I was in the same class as you in school. How's it going, man? And had a nice little chat with him, which was cool. He'd moved around quite a lot. He had like worked in IT, but that was a more positive part of my day. apart from that, been on the old plastic crack, working on my Warhammer. David's waving his in the... Yeah, I've almost finished a squad. There's a couple more little detail bits to paint, and then I've got a few more assembled and ready to be sprayed. Oh, there's Andy with his. Lovely. We'll start a separate Instagram, Sons of Salvage Warhammer. I'm joking.
Ilya just dropped off.
Yeah. Oh, Ilya's logged out. Lex is logged out.
He's walked away.
I will say, if we ever actually decide to use Discord instead of WhatsApp, we could have like a Discord channel dedicated to that. And then like one for video games, one for music, etc.
Significantly smaller Discord.
Okay, we could open it up. I know a lot of people put Discords behind a Patreon paywall, but we could just like open it up to anyone who wants to join in. Why not?
Absolutely. And then I've done a little bit of repair work on my jeans. I've done like a little bit of cycling because our car broke. So we had to cycle to the shops and a little ventilation hole had appeared. So we're repairing that a little bit. I don't have to bend over 90 degrees with that ventilation hole, but you know, it's all fixed. all tidy for the outside world now. Excited to get to the pubs, I must admit. I'm ready for this month. Yeah, that's about up for me.
One more thing I'd like to add is I know Ilya recommended Ghost of Tsushima a couple episodes back. I picked it up in a recent PlayStation sale and am just absolutely blown away by how good it is. It, like Ilya, you definitely sold me on it, but when I played it, it's like a whole nother level of amazingness that I hadn't expected. Like I've played Skyrim, I've played Fallout, played Horizon Zero Dawn, and like those are all amazing, but it's like the mechanics in this game is just so good. The reason why I wanted to mention it is they recently put a series out on Netflix called Age of Samurai, which is a historical documentary starting with the rule and rise to power and rule of Nobunaga in the 1500s all the way till I think like around 1600 or so. And it's pretty amazing. So they worked with this like Japanese studio to do a bunch of real life reenactments of the different battles and like actual garb that the different house clans would have wore, etc. It's like very, very historically accurate samurai battles. And there's one point that's talking about like the island of Tsushima in like real life history, which is cool. And then also to mention that Netflix just came out with an anime yesterday called Yusuke, I think is what it's called, which is about a black samurai who gets brought to Japan by, I think it's Portuguese traders, and then like stays in Japan and becomes a samurai for Nobunaga. But obviously it goes into like crazy 90s anime territory with, you know, monsters and all kinds of wild stuff. It's decent. I won't give away any spoilers, obviously. It wasn't mind-blowing, but it was decent. 6 episodes. If you like some of the older stuff from the 90s, like Seven Samurai or Samurai Champloo, some of those series, I think you would enjoy it. It also reminded me a lot of Afro Samurai, which the RZA worked on, because this one's produced by Flying Lotus and has like a Brain Feeder Flying Lotus soundtrack. So worth checking out as well.
Oh, cool. Definitely need to watch that.
Yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed it. I mean, it's very much trying to kind of like, it's an homage to a lot of those great 90s samurais animes. It's not trying to reinvent anything, but the Flying Lotus soundtrack is quite cool. And the idea of like someone of African descent sort of navigating Japanese samurai culture was kind of an interesting, unique take on it. So it was cool. I enjoyed it. Kevin, anything else you'd like to add?
No, nothing for me this time. Ilya?
I'd like to mention that I've just started listening to Alan Moore's Jerusalem audiobook. Now, this is available as a normal book as well. And I've been a fan of Alan Moore for quite some time and read most of his graphic novels and bits and pieces that's available. And this one was something that I kept putting off due to the sheer volume and size of it. It's about 1,000 pages long. So it's a bit of a mammoth. And because at the moment for me it's more convenient to listen to audiobooks, I just decided to be a good opportunity to tackle it. And I'm about it's broken in 3 chapters, parts, and I'm just finishing the first part of it, and it's pretty incredible. The different styles and the narrations are fantastic. It's all set in Alan Moore's hometown of Northampton, England, and it's got elements of historical and supernatural fiction, and he describes it as genetic mythology. So there's a lot of weaving of stories and characters together to tell this cohesive, long form drama. And although I don't know where it's going yet, it's a really epic journey, and I'm really enjoying every single minute of it at the moment. So yeah, I would definitely recommend that, and I think you know, a couple of the guys in this group as well would really appreciate it too.
Yeah, I bought it when it first came out on Kindle, and I think I read the first like 100 or 200 pages of it, something around like a woman whose brother was missing, if I remember correctly. It's been a while. And when you mentioned getting an audiobook, I wanted to like jump back into it, but I kind of got a bit sort of scared off from jumping in again. And then I know I was talking to Andy about reading some recent William Gibson. I got a bit scared off from that as well. So there's this like problem I have where there's like these really epic books I want to read, but yeah, they're quite intimidating. Have you found Jerusalem to be pretty approachable now that you've kind of gotten into it a bit, or is it very much like you really have to be dedicated to listening to it?
Well, I think it flows quite well, and yeah, you do have to pay attention because of, like I said, because of the interlinks and, you know, the combination of the characters. There's that intersections of them. So you do have to pay attention, but not like any other book that you would have to. I guess it's maybe a little bit on a bigger scale of it, but it's very approachable, and I don't think there's anything particularly difficult about it. It's just the size of it that I think that, you know, that you might be scared of. But Alan Moore's very verbose, so you know he likes to go into detail on a lot of things. So if you're not into maybe that I could see you being put off. But otherwise, yeah, I'd definitely recommend it, because I think he really gets into the psyche of his characters really well. And it spans, you know, hundreds of years. The characters that go back, you know, maybe 200 years, some of them, some even before that. So it's really fascinating, and I do think a long Netflix series or something like that would be really great to see that, even though he would probably hate every you know, the notion of someone remaking that. But yeah, I definitely could see that being a really fascinating watch.
Yeah, I think I'll have to go back to then, because like length isn't too intimidating. It's more just like the complexity and the sort of depth of the writing, but it sounds like it's pretty approachable.
It definitely is, and I think the good thing with the audiobook is that each character is given a different voice by the narrator, so it's quite easy to separate that. And you also get clues sometimes when there's conversations between these characters. Okay, this that person that I read, you know, a couple of chapters before. And you kind of, it's easier to maybe recognize some of those. You know, after 500 pages or so, you might have forgotten who that character was, but that kind of audio clue, I think, helps it along.
I know with Audible, you get like free credits, so I might have to see if I can use one of my girlfriend's mm-hmm. credits and maybe pick up the Audible.
Yeah. I mean, even if you buy it like at £20 or whatever it is, you're definitely getting your money's worth because of the the sheer volume of it. It's not like if you're using Audible, then definitely it's worth spending your credits on.
Awesome. Andy, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, just a quick one from me. Obviously, last time I spoke about Genghis Tron's Dream Weapon, which I reviewed for Apathy and Exhaustion. I've got another one coming up. Well, I haven't started writing it yet, but I've been listening to the album, and that's Vital by Big Brave. Absolutely stunning piece of music. For those who don't know, Big Brave are a three-piece from the States signed to Southern Lord. They started off as a minimalist folk outfit and then ended up picking up through chance, realizing that they could do what they kind of, their commission statement, using electric guitars and bass and drums and stuff like that, just by pure chance. And so they've added that to their sound. And so they make this kind of very heavy music that kind of it flirts with like Southern Gothic and US folk. And it's really sparse, and it ties, this album in particular ties in with themes of kind of belonging as being mixed race. The lead singer and the writer, she is mixed race, and it's kind of her talking about how she doesn't really fit in with either side, especially in from Quebec. So it's kind of tying in within Canada. It's really good. The lyrics are beautiful, and it's just a very, very clever and album that kind of has some really kind of nice, sparse and quite hypnotic beats that go out throughout it. I think it's out now. I think it came out a week or so ago. Highly recommend it. You can stream it off their Bandcamp. If you like it, go buy it. I will have a proper review written this week.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to give that a listen. It makes me think a bit of Holy Fawn, who started out as like kind of dark gothic indie folk and then moved into like shoegaze and hardcore type stuff. So I'll have to check this out.
Cool. That's me. Lex, have you got anything extra?
Not really. Spent a lot of time sitting outside pubs, really cold, in the freezing cold, not wearing enough layers, but otherwise that's about it. Anyone else?
How does it feel to be back out there, guys? Come on.
Feels great.
I haven't been to a pub yet. Oh no, I went once. I'm lying.
Although, to be honest, it's not quite the same when you have to sit outside in a beer garden in the freezing cold for a 2-hour slot where they then kick you out once your time's up. So it's not quite back to normal, but I guess we can't complain. It's better than nothing.
Exactly. And did you guys have a meetup recently, right? A few of you?
We did. Yeah, we did. Yeah, that went very well. It was good to see the guys again after, three, 4 months of not seeing each other. So yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, it's awesome. Good to just get out and see other faces, and see other people that you haven't been trapped inside with for however many months. It's a good time. Always enjoy House of Cans or whatever they're called. Some really nice, interesting beers there, like that watermelon one that really did taste like watermelon.
The Pastore one.
God, that was great.
Yeah.
Looking forward to us having our meetups once more back in London. That'll be nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Tom, anything to add, or should we jump into the news?
I've been listening to Manchester Orchestra's new album. Quite enjoy them, like kind of indie rock, a little bit of like synthy stuff in there that they've mixed in. But yeah, really good album. Always enjoy their stuff. Good listen. They've been like teasing it for like ages, and they keep like, giving little snippets of songs. It's like, oh, I just want the album. So that's out now, and I can relax.
Awesome. All right. Well, I guess on that note, let's jump into the news. First, the guys at Ironheart have started a podcast called Ironcast, I think it is, which they're a couple episodes in. So they did one with Giles, who sort of brought Ironheart to the West, I guess you could say, working with Harkison, and the second episode with his son, who's sort of taken over the day-to-day of the business. I highly recommend that episode. So it really goes a lot into how his son is kind of taking the business forward and like new products and stuff. And then they also just did a third episode with interviewing Danny of Rivet and Hyde. Obviously Rivet and Hyde's like the shop that probably brought us all together and introduced us to one another. It's kind of central to the London denim scene. So definitely worth listening to the Ironcast. And then also the guys at the Denim Heads podcast, they've just completed episode 20, which is their first season of the podcast. And I know at the end of episode 20, they were unsure about whether they're going to kind of come back, whether they're going to do it again. But I think we all as a podcast would probably share the same opinion that they did something pretty cool and recommend they keep it going, that we quite enjoy it. I noticed they brought up one of Kevin's questions and one of my questions in their last episode. So Denim Heads podcast, guys, keep going.
Yeah, I want to just give a quick shout out because Pigeon Tree Crafting, so Isaac, he's doing his yearly Indigo pre-order again. I came across it the other day, and it's as always, very popular, very interesting. There's a couple of cool things on there. There's a really cool pair of service boots, which I quite like. It's just a bit unfortunate I'm not looking for any new boots, but I'll probably try and pick up either one of the belts or one of the wallets, one of the bifolds, because it's pretty cool stuff. I think a couple of you have a belt or other products from him, so I don't think he needs introduction in this community either, because he's well known in the rest of the community. So yeah, go and have a look. It started yesterday, and I think it runs for 14 days, so until May the 15th. Get in there quick, because this stuff sells out very quickly.
And one thing I'll add on there about Pigeon Tree is that Isaac started doing a blog, I guess probably like a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. I'm not sure exactly how old, but he's writing some fantastic product reviews. Really, really enjoy every review he writes. I think he's really got like a good system in terms of like fit, construction, details, great photographs, etc. So definitely check out his blog. It's worth a read. And on that note, I'd add that he recently was writing up a review of the Tanuki Amagumo fabric in type 2 jacket, which is like this kind of grayish blue denim that's dyed with black beans. Really cool to see that review, and the fact that he was gifted the jacket by Tanuki, which is really awesome. And I also would mention that Denimio Shop is doing a contest called the Tanuki Kusaki for Spring Contest. So a bunch of us, myself included, bought a pair of the Kusaki jeans about a year ago, which is the jeans that have the pomegranate dyed weft. It's kind of a green weft. And Denimio has done a cool thing where each quarter, roughly, they've done like a little mini contest somehow correlated to these jeans. And the latest one is around taking pictures with your Kusaki jeans somewhere out in nature in some way, shape, or form. And they're going to give away one of the Amagumo garments, I guess, jeans or jacket, I'm not really sure. The contest just ended at the end of April. So I'm interested to see how badly I lose. I don't think I'll win it, but put a couple entries in. So that'll be cool to see. But I thought it was newsworthy because it's interesting for a brand to sort of do these kind of like little small things that re-engage you with the product you bought. So it's not just like, hey, buy this jean, buy this jacket, and then like forget about it. But rather every couple of months, they're kind of like bringing back people together who've bought that garment and engaged with that garment to kind of see different aspects of it. How has it faded? What is it broken in, et cetera. I think that's kind of a cool thing that more brands or shops should do to kind of get you to re-engage with something you bought from them.
Your picture should have been like, you know, the jeans standing up, nice kind of country lane and field or whatever, and then you kind of peeking around a bush, bending over 90 degrees, trying to get out your lycra dungarees. That would have been an instant win.
Yeah, I could have done some sort of like Swiss jean freak thing where like I layer my cycle kit and multiple layers of denim on top of it and like try and ride the bike and see if I can make it work. But
definitely get that cycle stank in there.
Oh man, the amount of chafing, I just like makes me cringe just thinking about it.
Start a fire with that kind of just rubbing.
One more bit of news I wanted to mention was around Snake Oil Provisions and their new shop they've launched. So they've relocated, I guess, from Long Beach, LA to Highland Park, LA. I thought this was interesting news because it feels like with each iteration of their shop they kind of like lean more and more into their kind of unique look and feel. So I want to see how you guys think about like a brand that sort of or sorry, a retailer that's kind of developing this identity that's beyond just what brands they carry. And like, you know, it's their sort of, it's the shop, it's the garments, the collabs, and like Ben's own sort of style and personality. Like, what do you guys think about that?
I like it. Actually, it was something I was going to bring up later on regarding another store, the shop in Vancouver and TJ. There are, you know, like I said, there's a few shops. When you think of them, you think of the brands that they start, you know, at the first thing that you think of. So, you know, Rivet and Hyde, first thing you think of is that they kind of do a modernized take on the kind of the heritage and workwear and, you know, Amokaji, however you want to phrase it, scene. Then you think, oh, it's Danny and Junior. You think of Son of a Stag, you think hardcore repro stuff. It's owned by Rudy. You think of Snake Oil Provisions, you think of Ben, and then you think of the brands they stock. And then, you know, with the shop in Vancouver, you immediately think of TJ before you think of the brands that he stocked. Those two stores, and Stanley and Strange is another one, are very good at kind of reaching out to their customer base, and they've made themselves exceptionally personable. And I think by having an initial focal point in a person, be it, you know, a single individual, or, you know, the kind of the crew behind the store, it makes them a lot more approachable, and it makes them, I think it's a very good thing. It's a very, very clever way of bringing in customers, because you're not going in, you know, you're being brought in by these really likable individuals who are clearly knowledgeable. And yeah, I think it's great. And I think, you know, best of luck to him with the new store.
All right, well, let's maybe move on to the main event. So today we're not going to do a Q&A because it's all getting rolled into our discussion topic. So we decided for this episode to do something a bit controversial, which is to turn this entire episode into one big shit post. No, I'm kidding. But we decided it'd be interesting to talk about things that we don't like about this hobby. Yes, I call it a hobby, but just please note, because this garnered a lot of feedback on Instagram, that's just a random word I chose to describe what we're into. You could call it a lifestyle, you could call it a style, you could call it a hobby. It's just the word that we happen to pick off the shelf. It doesn't really matter. But basically for this discussion topic, what we're gonna do is sort of cover things we don't like about our hobby or lifestyle, and ideally maybe how we could make them better. Obviously we don't wanna hurt anyone's feelings, so we won't, we don't wanna hurt anyone's feelings, so we're not gonna call out any individual names, and we're gonna try and be not assholes and nice people. So let's
no promises. Let's
good luck.
no, we're really nice. Please come and talk to us, and we will tell this you how terrible your genes are.
Yeah, this is the end of the Sons of Selfish podcast. See you later.
As the editor of this and the person who has to go into GarageBand and deal with all of this, I'm already kind of slightly nervous about how this conversation is going to go.
Mentally, David's like, delete.
This episode will not go live.
Tom's speaking up, delete.
we should set up a raffle about how quickly we'll cancel culture find us in this podcast. Yeah, one thing I'll mention too is I went onto our Instagram and captured all of the different comments that you all, our listeners, gave us about what you think you don't like about this hobby. So thank you very much for the engagement. This is a super engaging post. And I've kind of tallied up who mentioned the most of something versus the least. And so as we do this discussion topic, we've all got the kind of stack rank of what you guys thought was the most egregious parts of our hobby. The worst parts of it, and we can reference that. So let's kick things off. What we're going to do is a round table. Each person can either speak about something they themselves don't like about this hobby, or can grab something off of the list of what people most commented on. So I will kick things off, I guess. And I want to mention something that's not on the list, but that's people thinking you're not supposed to wash your jeans for 6 months. I think that's just complete insanity. I realized that that kind of idea started at a point when raw denim was kind of a new thing and they needed to keep it simple. Just kind of like, hey, I've got these new jeans. What do I do? Oh, just wear them for 6 months and don't wash them. I think that's kind of like saying, don't change your oil in your car until your car breaks down. It might be an easy way to help you understand car maintenance, but in reality, it's way more nuanced than that. And I think the key thing is when people say don't wash your jeans for 6 months, what they really mean is don't machine wash them for 6 months, because that like kind of softens them up, removes the starch, and kind of almost like sets in whatever fades or locks in whatever fades you've done so far. But I think what people don't get is that in that first 6 months, you should be able to hand wash them, rinse them, soak them, whatever you need to, even hand wash them with the washing machine cycle, pretty much whatever you need to do that's gentle to them, do it in 6 months. You know, people are always complaining about crotch blowouts and, you know, tears in their jeans. And it's like, guys, if you just wash them a couple times in that first 6 months in a delicate way, in a gentle way, you still get the fades and you won't ruin your jeans. So I think this whole like crotch blowout thing could be like completely negated if people just wash their jeans and don't wait 6 months. And it just drives me mad that people are convinced that that's the way you got to do it. So that's my first point.
Doesn't help that certain brands push that myth and have it written in there, like their care guides and stuff like that. So people will naturally follow that because, like, oh, well, they know best.
I think it's very much like a sales tactic.
Is it a tactic to sell more jeans?
I genuinely think it's like brands kind of came up with a tagline or, you know, a little thing that sales assistants can kind of say. Yeah. To make the jeans seem different and to justify the different price point of selvage jeans. It's like, oh, you know, it's all part of this, you know, crazy lifestyle that people do where they don't wash their jeans or they put them in the freezer. And it's literally all bollocks. There's like no science behind it at all. It's, you know, detrimental to the jeans. The whole freezer thing's a load of rubbish as well. And, you know, I think there's a couple of brands like Nudie and stuff like that where they're kind of high streety. And they kind of needed a tagline or, you know, a sales pitch to convince people to buy the slightly more expensive jeans, you know, because, you know, the vast majority of people who walked into a store probably don't understand it. So if you've got this, oh, no, it's part of this lifestyle where, you know, you don't wash them for 6 months. People go, oh, well, why would you do that? Oh, because, you know, the fading's better. You know, it's easy for the sales assistant to say that rather than being like, well, you know, you can kind of hand wash them, you know, in a couple of months if you like. But if they're a bit stanky before then, you know, just wash them. You know, that gets a little bit more complicated then to sell it to people. So, yeah, it's just bollocks, plain and simple.
And in terms of how to make it better, it's like, you know, brands, retailers, like, it'd be so easy for you guys just to tell all of your customers the right way to do things, you know, not be afraid to wash their jeans, how to clean them, how to look after them. So fix it, darn it. Tell people how to take care of their stuff. And yeah, let's stop perpetuating this 6 month myth.
I do think a few of the retailers have come out and said, you know, do wash your jeans.
Yeah.
So I think even TJ came out quite recently in one of his videos and was saying things like that. So I think that is changing. So.
Yeah, not to toot the horn of Ironheart at all, but I remember at one point Giles had posted, I think on their forum or on their website, I forgot, where he was kind of the opinion that you should wash your jeans, like every jean, no matter what, sand fries or not, when you first buy them, because he was mentioning all of the like starch and stuff from the manufacturing process that if you wash them right away, the cotton threads will actually break in better, something to that nature. But so that's one case I've seen of a brand sort of really going against this whole wait 6 months thing. But yeah, I think like the myth needs to die.
Yeah, and it's almost kind of like being re-perpetuated with brands like Levi's coming out and saying, oh no, you know, to save water and just, you know, make sure you're as environmentally friendly as possible, you know, never wash your jeans. which is, you know, it's kind of the second step now of brands trying to become eco-friendly and environmentally aware. And then you've got Levi's CEO being like, don't wash your jeans. And people are like, no, that's not where all the water usage comes from. It comes from you making the jeans and fading them out and, you know, using all these processes and stuff. It doesn't matter if the person washes them. Obviously, you know, don't wash them every single day of the week. But, you know, give it a week or so at least.
Yeah, it's a great point. Like, I recently bought those Levi's shrink to fit jeans with the neon green weft I mentioned for $20.
Of course.
And the tag on it, the tag on it is like, if you wash your jeans by your normal size, they'll stretch back out again. If you wash your jeans by one size bigger, because they'll shrink down to what you need and stretch back out. If you never wash your jeans, which some of us love to do, just buy your normal tag size. And it's like, no, you're perpetuating the wrong idea here. And then furthermore, when they talk about buying your normal tag size, their inseams are like 32 or 34. So they don't even add the extra length that you need for the like 8% vertical shrinkage for unsanitized jeans. And it just like drove me mad that like the biggest brand is kind of perpetuating the wrong way of doing things.
I guess it's almost like kind of with energy companies as a whole, they kind of, what the big ones perpetuate this. It's very much the consumer's fault that everything is bad. And you need to make sure you turn all your light bulbs and your light sockets off. Otherwise, the world's going to burn. It's like, you know, you're the one who shouldn't be washing your jeans. And, you know, you never should now. And they almost turn it into like a black and white issue instead of maybe if you give your jeans a little bit of a sniff and they're smelling a bit bad, you know, just soak them or shower them off. You know, it's very much like a marketing. They're trying to make it a black and white situation of don't wash your jeans ever, because that's easy for people to remember because marketing people think they're dumb. But it's just like, just hand wash your jeans whenever you need to. It's simple as that.
Cool. I guess for a second topic, Kevin, do you want to speak to something?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, the one thing that I would like to see improved, or, you know, that I don't really like about this hobby, is it's kind of like I'm a sucker for patterns and prints on shirts. And I think there is not enough choice out there. Every time I see all these releases come out of all these brands every year, and there is another Western shirt in indigo, and there's another Western shirt in black, and, you know, this, it's the same stuff over and over again. Making David happy, definitely. You know, the only way they can make him even more happy is to bring out a neon version, obviously. But
I do have a neon yellow Western at my parents' house.
Well, there we go. But no, I'd like to see a bit more color, a bit more prints, a bit more patterns on shirts. Like when I scroll through my Instagram feed, and this is obviously like not to anyone specifically, but I see a lot of blues, a lot of blacks, a lot of army greens, a lot of navy, a lot of camel, you know, all those like slightly boring colors, if you ask me.
Take that back.
I will never
take that back.
Yeah, no. So every time I see something slightly different that has a pattern on it, you know, I normally tend to go for it. So I want to see a bit more of that. Give me a bit more options, you know.
That's because you're living in the hot weather, mate.
Yeah.
No. Doesn't. No, my options are limited here anyway, indeed, because of the weather. But, you know, that doesn't make a difference that, you know, I want to see a bit more patterns or prints on things.
You bring up a good point, because like discharge dyeing, so like wabash and all of those kind of thing, you know, what's it? What's the Indian one? Ketek dyeing?
ICAT.
That's another one. There's like a few different kinds of like discharge printing techniques. It's like such a big part of indigo history, indigo culture. And yeah, it feels like brands could definitely lean into it a bit more.
Yeah, agreed.
One of my favorite patterns that I really like is the rock and roll shirts by Mr. Freedom, the Biribi ones. They're like Aloha style shirts. Maybe that's something that you could have a look into, Kevin. And a lot of the designs is something that Christoph does himself. So he did one, I think, last year, and he did a painting of the pattern that he actually put out. So yeah, I think maybe something like that you could have a look at.
I feel like kind of 10 years ago or so, there was quite a few brands that done lots of different like Wabash patterns, stuff like that, like Stevenson overall, they're kind of like early stuff. There was like all these kind of like 1800 patterns and like crazy stuff. I feel like a lot of that's gone to the wayside as people have kind of cemented in that style of, like, I want an indigo fabric shirt in, you know, sashiko pattern or something, you know, where those styles have kind of kept being repeated and have kept being popular, especially with kind of like limited releases. It almost feels like the Japanese brands have like doubled down on those styles, and, yeah, and all the kind of fancier patterns and stuff have just moved to the wayside because they might, you know, not be everyone's cup of tea, while a solid indigo shirt is probably an easy sell. I must admit.
It's interesting though, that shirt that Kevin picked up recently with the kind of like circular patterns on it is quite a unique shirt, but like it looks modern, it looks kind of heritage. It's something different and not something you see every day, but still quite interesting and unique. So it feels like more of that kind of thing would be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the shirt that I'm wearing for the Indigo Invitational. Yeah, again, because it's just something slightly different. You don't see it that often. It's not that, you know, when I scroll through my feed, I see 20 other guys wearing it, which I normally tend to do anyway. Like, I tend to go for stuff that you don't necessarily see too much of. But yeah, because of the lack of those kind of like types of shirts, I tend to like move away from like the denim scene in terms of upper body stuff. So I very often end up at Scotch and Soda, which is obviously a Dutch brand, but I was introduced to that because my girlfriend used to work there. And yeah, the prints on their shirts are amazing. Very playful, very colorful. And it just fits me, I guess.
If anyone wants to see the shirt Kevin's talking about on the Worn Out Global Instagram, he posted a photo shoot with a bunch of logs. And he happened to be wearing that shirt while photographing the logs.
Yes, exactly. Beautiful logs around me.
And I guess technically tree stumps.
Awesome. That was it for me. Ilya?
I'd like to pick out people buying denim that's too small and skinny jeans. That would be my dislike.
Careful, huh? I am of the slimmer variety.
Yeah, so I'm not talking about slim jeans, I'm talking about skinny jeans here. I just don't think, one, in raw form that they are actually comfortable. If you can't take your jeans off without having to cut your ankle off, then it's probably too skinny. And if your jeans are skinnier than your girlfriend's, then you're probably doing it wrong. But that's my feeling. And the other part is buying denim too small. And again, I think this is something that some of the retailers and some of the people in the community have perpetuated over the years for better fades, for better fits. And again, it's just another cause to destroy denim a lot quicker.
And your testes,
yeah. So your children will not be wearing jeans because they won't be around.
is it like Avengers? They're like, Mr. Stark, I don't feel too good. No.
There will be a definite oxygen deficiency. So I think those are one of my biggest pet hate, I guess, of it. And you know, this is coming from someone who used to wear them. So I know I'm talking from experience. It's not something I'm just, look at you know, the younger people and envy them, because I can't fit into those kind of things. I think it's marketed to, you know, to a certain age group, and you know, it's something that you might want to go for because you think, oh, it looks really good. But then when you actually experience a nice fitted jean, it's a world of difference, I think. And like I said, with buying it in raw, I just don't think it looks good. It doesn't feel good. And, you know, if you can't move your leg up or sit down without discomfort, then that's I think you're doing it wrong.
It's uncomfy. I used to wear skinny, or not skinny, but really quite slim jeans as well when I got into raw. And now I wear kind of more straight cut. And occasionally I'll go back if I'm doing some DIY or painting, and I'll just get an old pair of jeans and throw them on. I can hardly move in the bloody things. And I used to cycle around London and just like live in these things. And now it's just trying to paint a wall, and I've got like 2 inches of butt crack hanging out.
Is that going on our OnlyFans as well?
I'll send you a photo, Tom.
Exactly. When you go and put those jeans back on after wearing something a little bit more straighter, you realize like, what the hell was I doing? So I used to have like a pair of 5'11 commuter jeans, which I used to cycle in and, you know, be on the scooter on. I thought they were great at the time, but yeah, trying to put them on now is just like putting jeggings on, which, yeah, not a fan of.
I feel like kind of when people start with raw denim, they will probably go for the fit that they're most familiar with, which will be skinny or slim or a taper, because that's kind of what they previously bought. So like when I started it, when I was 18, I've had like a raw pair of 5'11s, which I loved, and then kind of, you know, moved into the Japanese stuff. But I always kind of stuck with the slim fits, because that's what I was familiar with and kind of used to. And you kind of go, oh, you know, it's painful because that's like the idea of raw denim, you know, no pain, no gain. Oh yeah, break them in. And then there will be like a gateway brand or two that has a slightly higher rise or slightly looser cut. And then you kind of start moving away and you're like, oh, I can actually fit my hands in my pockets now. And, you know, I can actually bend over without, you know, breaking my balls. don't know what word I was looking for.
You can say it.
if I see someone who's like new to the scene, and, you know, they've got some like really, really skinny, or like, you know, Edwin ED 55s or something like that, where it's, you know, on the tighter side, it's like, okay, yeah, I don't know, they look cool, man, you know, and you're, you know, getting really good fades. You know, have you tried on a pair of, you know, TCBs or something like that? You know, that kind of, it's a little bit different, a little bit wider. And, you know, often people like come back and be like, holy shit, I can breathe. And there's not a breeze down my ass. Oh, amazing. But, you know, if someone's been like, you know, buying raw jeans for like 20 odd years and they're still buying skinny, then it's a bit like, try something a little bit wider. You know, you might thank me later.
Yeah. One thing I'll add to that.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Tom.
Go on.
One thing I'll add to that is when you're new to raw denim and you go into a shop and the shop owner's like telling you what size or what style to take, it's worth trusting their judgment, because they will have seen how jeans change over time. And oftentimes a pair of jeans that they recommend will either feel too baggy or they'll look like they're not fitted enough to you. But what the shop owner can see is they'll know how that jean's going to evolve. And I think so many times when I was new to the hobby, I would buy a pair of jeans or be afraid to buy a pair of jeans because I didn't think they would look good. But if I ever committed to it, I bought it and I gave them 30 wears, like 30 days of wear. At the end of that, then I'd make a decision about whether they still worked for me or not, because even just after 30 days, the amount a pair of jeans will shape to you, mold to you, break in and fit to you, you just can't really guesstimate that when you're in the shop. And so having faith and being willing to like roll with it, I guess you could say, until the jeans break in is crucial. And you may say, oh, they're a bit baggy. Well, break them in. Oh, they look a bit weird in my knees. I don't know, break them in, and then you'll be surprised how often they actually do work fine for you. And they're not as baggy as you thought. They kind of, I think it's almost like looser fit jeans look less baggy once they're broken in because they shape to you. Whereas off the shelf, you look kind of like a Ken doll in like cardboard jeans.
I think the whole like skinny jeans thing, when I think about skinny jeans, I think about like the second wave of Britpop bands, like the Cooks, Kaiser Chiefs, Arctic Monkeys, who'd be standing on stage with these super skinny jeans on, everything's dangling around, you know. That's what it reminds me of. And I think obviously because those kind of bands became really popular, that became like a mainstream thing to wear skinny jeans. But yeah, I'm glad that period is kind of over.
Well, Levi's apparently made some statement that the era of skinny jeans is dead and that it's now the era of loose fit jeans again, which is obviously just a big marketing ploy, but it'll be interesting to see
get those 501 sales up.
It'll be interesting to see if smaller brands follow suit.
Andy.
Yes.
I feel like you've got a lot on your chest that you need to
He's been waiting
release.
For this.
He's venting. I can see the heat off his hand.
I do have a few. I'm not going to lie. Some actually tie in with stuff people have said, so I'll kind of hold them to one side and we can address them in a bit. And there's a couple that have, you know, one or two of these are very, very, very subjective. One's a bit of an aside that Ilya knows very much. The one I'll jump on first is people getting obsessed with specific brands and literally, and like, dedicating their identity, or at least their online identity, around that brand. The two big offenders brand wise on this are Nudies and Red Wing. And this is not to say that they're bad brands in any way, but you know, when you've got about 1,000 accounts floating around on Instagram that are all linked to, or like something Wings or Wings something or this, that, and the other, and they that, you know, people have just bought, you know, 12 different versions of the same mock toe, just in different colors. It just feels like you're trying to, it's like someone's trying to build their identity on something that is just kind of, it's a pair of boots. And I feel that people are pigeonholing themselves by doing so. I mean, I'm not slagging off these brands. I mean, Red Wing make great boots and they're great, you know, especially great introductory pairs. I've had a pair. I think pretty much everyone in the group has a pair or have had pairs of Red Wings. You know, they're not bad boots, but I feel that people, because they're seen as like the cool boot, stick themselves in this little hole and aren't willing to expand their, you know, their knowledge and their kind of understanding of the scene. And it just feels very, I'm trying to think of the right word without it sounding just really shitty.
But, cultish,
yeah, there's a bit of cultish there going on.
Almost obsessive compulsive.
Yeah,
like in every scene where people kind of start collecting something or a trend start, there will be the obsessive compulsive people who have to have every single model of that thing. You know, so I think whenever a trend starts or a movement or a hobby or something like that, there will always be those people who will obsessive compulsive buy every single thing, no matter, you know, how much it costs. You know, if there was a limited model made like 10 years ago and, you know, there's one up for like a grand or something on eBay, then they will buy that.
And Andy, what would you recommend then for those people who are pigeonholing themselves in this manner?
Just have a look around. Yeah, I mean, the big thing is that I think the key, or that kind of the main thing, especially with Red Wing, is it's the mock toe boot that people want, and that's where they're getting obsessed with. And a lot of the other boot making brands don't touch mock toe as much. You know, if you still want to stay in that pay, you know, in kind of that kind of cost range, you've got Thurigoods do them, Chippewa do a mock toe, don't they? Yeah. You know, Dana do the Bull Run. You know, maybe it should be slightly more expensive. If you're willing to push the boat out and spend, you know, flash some serious cash on a pair of mock toes, go John Lofgren. Or, you know, go chat to Peng and get yourself on the 9-month waiting list. But you know, also just look at the different styles. I mean, also the Mokto silhouette does not suit every look and does not suit every outfit.
Doesn't suit skinny jeans.
Makes you look like you got big boat feet. But yeah, I mean,
I have got big boat feet.
But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, and then there's just that proliferation of accounts floating around Instagram that are Red Wing something or something wings. And it just seems to be that if you're wearing Selvage, you have to wear Red Wings or something like that. And that's, you know, it's a complete fallacy.
It's almost like the starter pack, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I get that. You know, first couple of pairs of boots I bought were Red Wing. I bought a pair of Wolverines and then I got two pairs of Red Wings. And then I started to go. And I think, you know, it's, the longer you're into the scene, into this kind of way of dressing, the more willing you slowly get to kind of push the boat out on the spend it on your expenditures. You know, actually, I will spend a little bit of money on a pair of boots. I'll get a pair of Trumans that are, say, $450 instead of the $300 that a pair of Red Wings are. Now, I'm going to push the boat out because actually I'm going to get a better quality. What the fuck, Tom? a slightly better quality boot, you know. I'm gonna kind of try to find, in fact, Truman do Mokto's anyway as well now, so you know, if you're obsessed with that particular silhouette, you can go outside of it. I mean, this is just very much my little rant.
Yeah, and I think we're not trying to say that you should spend more money. Like, there are options in that price point, like some of the UK Northampton shoemakers you can get for a good price. Paraboot in France you can get for a good price.
Yeah,
in the States, Rancourt makes amazing stuff, and they're quite approachable. So it's almost like we need to like share the love to other brands who are making solid boots at a similar price point. And it's almost like in streetwear kind of obsession with like just you got to have Jordans or like you got to have Air Max.
Yeah, you got to wear Supreme.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, there's Palace. There's these guys. There's those guys.
Red Wing is the Yeezy of the kind of heritage workwear scene.
Well, it's almost like a uniform to be part of the club, mm-hmm. isn't it? I think that's probably my biggest problem with it is that you feel, or some people might feel like, oh, I need a pair of Selvage jeans, I need a pair of Red Wings, and you know, some kind of flannel or a jacket to be part of the club, and you know, that's not the case. I think there's a room for a lot of variation in this scene. And I think a lot more variety would be more welcome because especially if you've been around for a little while, it does get boring to look at the same type of fits over and over. So yeah, variety.
Yeah, I think it's probably worth a separate discussion topic, but all six of us have like different approaches to how we dress and kind of like what we bring into it. So whether it's like more streetwear, more vintage, more workwear, more heritage, there's like so many different ways in which people can participate in this lifestyle, I guess it's supposed to be.
Lifestyle, not a hobby. I do think it would be quite a good discussion for one of the later episodes, you know, about developing your styles and things like that. And also, I think one of the interesting things is that, you know, Andy, that brought up was, you know, if you're only buying Red Wings, if say you have bought three or four boots and they're supposed to last a lifetime and you're buying other boots, you know, are you, you know, what is the thought process behind that? How many boots do you really need? And, you know, and I'm, you know, guilty of this, buying probably too much, you know, within the scene. But I think also, you know, I do stealth stuff when I feel like I'm not necessarily wearing them, or I think I've outgrown something, or whether it's physically or mentally. but yeah, I think it's worth touching upon at some point.
Yeah, I think that Ilya, you just alluded to one of the things that a couple of folks voted on was this notion of like buy less, buy better. But I think the reality is There's no false pretense here. The reality is, if your wallet allows you to, I think most people in this lifestyle buy better, but buy just as much as they would do anyways. Like, I don't really think that anyone in this lifestyle or hobby has successfully figured out how to buy less. It's almost like spend better and buy it once, but I think it's kind of just marketing bullshit. I think we're all guilty of just simply buying more stuff that's expensive if we can afford it. And that's more marketing spiel than anything.
I would argue that, you know, I've got a wardrobe full of very cheap t-shirts that all have holes and are falling apart to the point where I will throw them away. While the nicer t-shirts that I've got and I bought from Velveteen and places like that, which I probably buy a little bit less than I used to buy t-shirt wise, but you know, I still like to buy fresh t-shirts. You know, they have lasted fucking so much longer. And you know, you might buy lots of boots, but compared to when I used to buy loads of Converse, which I, you know, always picked them up in sale, you know, back when they were just the standard, not even the 70s Converse. After a year, they'd fall apart to the point where it's just a throwaway product.
The difference is you're not having to throw them away. You're just collecting them almost.
Collecting dust.
You're a hoarder, Tom.
No. But, you know, if you have a big collection of Red Wings, you could say, oh, I might sell a couple of pairs. And they are actually wearable and completely acceptable to resell. While if someone tried to resell their scrappy pair of Converse that have holes and are just like completely just destroyed to the point of you can't wear them, well, you can't resell that. So
they're not going to go to a landfill, Tom.
Exactly.
The Red Wing boots.
Yeah. There is a definite difference between the disposability of cheap clothing and the lastability and the longer value of life that it has. And you can resell them and it can be repaired and you take care of the leather. So the leather stays good for 20, 30, 40 years. I mean, you know, I had people with R.M. Williams coming into the shop for their second or third resole. And they bought them in the 1970s when they went to Australia. And they're like, I've got four or five other pairs, which I, you know, rotate and, you know, I buy sneakers and stuff like that. But these are my work boots.
Maybe it's more of like a mindset shift as opposed to like a shopping habit shift. So like we still buy a lot of crap and we don't buy less necessarily, but we are more willing to embrace imperfection and embrace change. So like my wool slippers, I have a huge asshole that I've worn through the sole of them and I can like see my heel through the shoe. And it's like, normally I would never have kept wearing these. I would have thrown them away and just bought more slippers. But it's like, because of raw denim and all that kind of stuff, I'm like okay with stuff being beat up and worn and so maybe it's like a mindset shift, but not necessarily a wallet habit shift.
So I think everyone likes that little endorphin boost when they buy something new. You know, it's kind of ingrained in our consumerist society that, you know, everyone has to go buy stuff and have a new outfit for when they go to the pub next, mm-hmm. and, you know, stuff like that. But if you're buying stuff that does last longer and can be repaired, that's a lot better than buying a t-shirt once and then throwing it in the cupboard and then probably chucking it away in a, you know, a month or two when you bought another couple of pairs of cheap t-shirts. You know, I just find it very annoying when people are like, oh, it's exactly the same thing. If you buy lots of cheap stuff or lots of expensive stuff, you're just spending more money. It's like, no.
But one thing that's nice serendipity is when you open like Apple Photos or Google Photos, you see a picture of like yourself in one of your favorite shirts or jeans, but it was like 10 years ago. And you're like, oh, wow, man, I bought that shirt 10 years ago. So I think it is quite nice when you're surprised sometimes how often you've had one of your favorites that still feels like it's in good shape. So I think the longevity and durability piece it is not arguable with that. That's for sure a part of a lot of these brands that we support. Cool. Lex, do you want to throw a discussion topic in there?
Okay. All right. This could be a slightly controversial one. One of my dislikes is boots that don't have laces. So engineer boots or Chelsea boots. Because I know a few of you guys. Yeah, exactly.
Here we go.
And it's partly a personal thing because I've got gigantic feet. And I find any boot that doesn't have a lace or something at the end. So I like a mock toe is fine because it's got the mock toe. Monkey boots work for me because the laces come further down. But any boot that's just plain at the end, it makes my feet look gigantic. So I've never got engineer boots. So I apologize for that, for those of you who wear them. That's going to get some complaints on the page, isn't it?
Yeah.
What about a cowboy boots with their decorative stitching?
Pointy toes.
I actually have a pair of cowboy boots that I've never worn. I bought them at vintage years ago. No.
Hypocrite.
I've never worn them out, though. I bought them at a charity shop for a tenner years ago, just purely because they fit me, and nothing ever fits my ridiculous feet. But yeah, that's one of my pet hates. But otherwise, I was looking through the list, and actually, I'm to be optimistic and maybe change the thing. There's not that much I dislike about it. Like generally, I think I get on with everyone, kind of thing. I'm gonna be the optimist here in the group and not complain and just say everything's.
Ooh, that's not why we're here. One of, yeah.
There's always bring this one optimist. Bloody hell.
Well, he is Dr. Collie now, and you shouldn't argue with your doctor. They know what's best.
Not yet. One day, but yeah. No, that's about it for me. Does anyone else have? Who hasn't had a complaint yet?
Tom.
Oh, God, I bet he's got some.
Dun, dun, dun.
Do you know what? Like, that's as much as I kind of probably scream and shout about certain things. I think my biggest gripe is people taking it too seriously, which might actually be on the list. So I just won't. Yeah.
It's the top one, I think.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Should we just roll into that then?
It ties in with one of my pet hates, which is gatekeeping.
Mm.
It's all the same, really.
Yeah, and kind of whenever I impassionately, not argue, but impassionately speak about something, it's usually don't take it seriously. You know, the rules and kind of things that you have to do in this kind of weird hobby scene lifestyle thing that we've got going on. You don't have to follow it. If you do, and you know, that brings you joy and you like saying, oh, you know, I need to do 250 wears, which I will, you know, tally on my jean pocket. Great. Do that. But not everyone has to do it. And if you're just someone who just likes the look and the scene and you think it's a cool place to be and you just want to buy one pair of jeans, but you might wear some H&M jeans during the week you go to work, great, do that, you know, just don't stress. But yeah, I'm sure we'll delve deeper into the pit of despair.
So I guess on that note, and given where we are time-wise, maybe let's touch base on some of the items that the listeners gave to us is their vote. So the first one, which Tom just alluded to, it kind of covers different facets all rolled together, but it's basically it's almost like this whole notion of like the hobby's intimidating for various things. Like one, it's because, you know, Andy said gatekeeping, not sharing info, so like not helping people get into the hobby. Or two, it's looking down on certain brands, like, oh, these jeans from these guys or those boots from those guys aren't good enough. Or it's, you know, kind of social media.
Which we literally just talked about.
True. Andy's one of those people. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
he does look very unapproachable on his Instagram. It's like,
I don't know what to do with my hands, mate.
Army sergeant.
I don't know what to do with my hands. I know the whole Red Wing thing did sound like I was like, why would you own all those Red Wings? Ultimately, if you love wearing Red Wings, you know, cool. I don't really have a drama with it. I just feel that people are pigeonholing themselves when they shouldn't.
Yeah,
variety is the spice of life.
Yeah, that's it. I mean,
one thing I'd like to touch upon, the gatekeeping. I personally feel that the community is very open, and I've never had anyone come back to me and say, I'm not going to share information with you when I've reached out to them. And that goes to both the old school heads and the kind of the newer people that I've had conversation with. I get hit up with quite a few, you know, messages in my DMs about, you know, how do I size this? How do I size that? And, you know, I've always shared that information because when I first started off, I had the same questions that I approached people who had been in the scene for a long time, and they've probably been, you know, been hit with those same questions multiple times, but yet they still came out and you know, responded with loads of really useful things to me. And I think on the whole, it's been very welcoming. And I think the people who are gatekeeping, you could probably count them maybe on the one hand. So I kind of disagree with that.
I think we might be looking at gatekeeping from a different angle here.
Maybe.
So gatekeeper, yeah. I'm seeing it more as the people who are seen as like, who act like they are the keepers of the knowledge and they know better than you. And if you do something that's wrong, they call you out, you know, be it they call out a brand for not doing something they don't, for doing something they don't like, or they call out certain people for doing stuff that they don't like. And it's kind of they're laying down the law. Not really, I know everything, but I'm not going to tell you. It's more, I know and I'm going to tell you whether you like it or not.
Yeah, but that just comes down to opinion.
Yeah,
and it's just, I think it's sometimes just it's quite how much do you, you know, aggressive. Take that person's opinion. I mean, you know, you've got the vote of power by following that person. If you don't agree with them, you don't have to look. This is the person just saying, this is what I feel. And you have the same, you know, right to express your opinion about those kind of things.
Yeah, but I think that there are a few people that, you know, sometimes you do get it where people will act as if what they're saying is the law.
Mm.
They are right, you are wrong. It's not, I personally feel that I would go, you know, you look better in this, or I'm not a fan of this brand because of X, Y, and Z. It's that brand's a load of shit. Mm. You know, you look like an idiot. It's not common. It isn't common, but it does exist. And I do think people need to kind of ties in with not taking yourself.
That's probably just part and parcel of any hobby and any kind of scene. And it's almost perpetuated with the kind of explosion with social media.
Yeah.
It becomes a lot more obvious, those people, because the most opinionated people shout the loudest.
It's the same with, I mean, going back to our hobby of little plastic soldiers.
Yeah.
That's bad for it. And, you know, a lot of TV and film theories are just like series are just as bad, be it, you know, Marvel or Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or whatever. You know, you're gonna have these gatekeepers, you're gonna have these people who gob off at everything.
Yeah, even, you know, films, there will be that artsy person.
Yeah.
Ilya Jonas, his amazing sculpt in there.
Some green stuff action.
If you get into films, there will be that person who's like, oh no, you can only watch French era films from the 1940s. They are the best films. It's going to happen everywhere, but I think it's particularly highlighted because our hobby is very social media centered. You know, it is essentially us posting pictures of our junk and our fades and butt shots and stuff. So, you know, that is always kind of almost magnetic to people who will be like, oh no, you've not quite done the right turn up on those jeans because it should be a blah, 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 blah. So my experience from the hobby is it's quite easy to drown out those people and quite easy to delete that, especially because, you know, I have a brand and, you know, we do advertising and stuff like that on Instagram and Facebook, and the amount of people are like, oh, why aren't these jeans £10? Oh, this is ridiculous price. It's just like, oh, delete, what a bloody knob.
I think it's worth adding there too that I think a lot of it is just perception of gatekeeping or kind of elitism, but it's not actually really part of the culture. So I guess part of what draws a lot of us to kind of raw denim and heritage and all that stuff is the fact that it's kind of more of a tough style. So it's like that biker look, that military look, that kind of tough workwear look. So I think our personalities often come across on social media as like us trying to be tough guys, but in reality, we're just like a bunch of like insecure, sappy men. We're not actually tough guys. So maybe it might be a perception that it's kind of like,
especially as like kind of a new looking from the outside in.
It's, yeah, you know, exactly.
Lots of guys in very expensive clothing, or, you know, perceptibly very expensive clothing.
Or you could be like Andy, who is tough and sappy at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm just a big emo.
Yeah, secretly you're just crying inside, like
two more teenagers. Little bits I'll add there.
I'm like Pete Steele, just a big, big angry goth. Or am I?
It's not coming through very well.
Didn't work. That was Macho Man by the Village People. Yeah. Sorry about that, guys.
I mean, secretly, we are more the Village People rather than Macho Man, right?
So. Yeah.
Someone needs to do like a Village People capsule collection of like all their different workwear.
Indian headdress and everything.
Oh, no.
Get done for cultural appropriation, mate, if you do that.
Yeah. No native. Oh, actually, sorry. Quick plug just on the side. I just discovered a brand called Ginyu, Ginew.
Yeah, they're cool, man. Yeah.
Oh, man. Worth checking out. It's owned by an agent of Native American descent. And some really dope designs and garments. So
blanket linens. Up.
Can you link it?
Yeah. It's
Future David here is GINEWUSA.com.
Cool brand that folks need to check out. But yeah, one other thing I wanted to add to you is if folks want to see what it's like to get into this hobby from the fresh side of things and like what a new hobbyist's journey looks like, I would recommend going back and listening to the Denim Head podcast from the start, because those two guys basically started a podcast as they were getting into raw denim. So it's a great way to see kind of like what it's like to get into this lifestyle as someone who's new to it. And the other thing I'd mention too is if folks have any questions or whatever about the hobby, lifestyle, hit us up on Instagram, hit us up on our Gmail. Like, we're happy to share our knowledge. We're happy to kind of like, you know, basically whatever you guys want to know or gals that you're afraid to ask, just ask us. And like, we won't necessarily talk on the podcast. We're happy to kind of come back to you directly. But yeah, we want to help out what we can do.
Mm-hmm. I'm good at recommending people for like nice heavy t-shirts that won't show your permanently erect nipples, so you know, hit me up.
On that note, I mentioned guys and gals. The next highest comment on the Instagram post was around women's fits, and also around sort of female owned brands, shops, etc. It's an interesting one. I've talked to my girlfriend a lot about her vantage on raw denim, and for her, she's just kind of like, it's not comfortable enough. Like, you know, it's basically she either has to go for flattering jeans that need to be really soft, or she needs to go for raw denim, but then it's by its very nature not going to be very flattering. So I know for her, that's kind of kept her from jumping into the hobby. I know Jake just had his partner on Stitch Perfect podcast talking about how she got into the hobby. Vintage Feather is her Instagram. That's worth a listen. I definitely feel like, you know, this should be better. And I don't know if we're perpetuating this by having a podcast with six dudes called the Sons of Selvage. are we part of the problem? And how do we make this hobby more approachable and welcoming for women?
No, I think, I agree. It is a tough one though, because like, it is already quite a niche thing, right? Even within the menswear scene, like it's not as big as like streetwear, for example. So it is already very niche. So those brands are already kind of like, you know, they're not making a lot of money. They're not like millionaires or whatever. And because it is already so niche, and I don't think the market for women's jeans is that, or women's raw Selvage jeans is that big. So it is a bit of a gamble for them. But I completely agree though. Like, my girlfriend absolutely like loves the way that I, you know, love my jeans and wear them and stuff. So she's very often looked for something that, you know, would fit her as well. And sometimes even, you know, looking at men's jeans that could work. But yeah, again, it comes down to like, it's not comfortable enough really to wear. So she's got a pair of Black Horse Blaine. But that's about it. She tends to stick to like Levi's and things like that, LVC stuff that's, you know, pre-distressed and stuff like that, not necessarily raw. Just because it's a lot more comfy.
Yeah, there's only a few brands that really have made a dedicated attempt at catering towards women, which is a shame. You know, Nudies, going back to Nudies, obviously they started off with a completely androgynous fit, though all the fits were very masculine or had men's names. They've now shifted and actually have like a dedicated women's range now, which is, I think, is a very wise decision there, and we'll open up the market there. Imogene and Willie do it. You know, Charles Miller Brand have just announced that they're gonna create a women's areas range as well, and then you've had, like, you know, other brands have skirted with it. 316, do they still do women's stuff? I know they used to.
I haven't seen them.
Nah, but they did. But I know they did.
New lines out.
Yeah, and Indigo Farah, you know, they had a short-lived thing when they did the collaboration with Miriam Parkman last year. So there's a couple of pairs out there. So there are a few, but yeah, I think a lot of brands do need to step up their game there, and then obviously do a bit of marketing to actually make it approachable and appealing to more women. Obviously, we are all terrible people to give any kind of advice there, as we're, you know, we're all blokes. But yeah, I think they really should do a bit of research, and actually, you know, some of them they could easily take that step and actually make it quite an appealing and, you know, potentially lucrative addition to their current repertoires.
From the smaller brands, I think Dawson Denim do some really nice fits as well, which are maybe a little bit more high end, but high end as well. Yeah, Dawson, I think, are quite good because they have got some nice fits. They're obviously it's all handmade, and it's supporting you know, a really good couple behind the brand. So Black Horse Lane obviously do some great fits, I think, for women. My wife's actually just picked up there's like a stripy pair. I'm not sure what the model is called. It's on, I think it's almost a chino, but it's made
like
from
the bold stripe.
The bold stripe one, yeah.
They're lovely.
But yeah, I think it comes down to comfort and the fits. So, you know, I think a lot of women might not necessarily want something that's very starchy and very raw. That's what my wife, you know, one of the main complaints is that she doesn't want to go through that process. So she will want to, yeah, those are the ones, David. SE8, yeah, those are cool. So one of the things she'll want to do is wash the jeans a couple of times before she starts wearing them to soften them up. So it's, you know, it's slightly different, I think, the expectations from those garments. And I also think that I'm talking from, you know, from my wife's experience here, is that she's a little bit maybe more attracted to a vintage style or cut, and not necessarily buying new stuff all the time, and she might not necessarily want to invest that kind of money into this a lifestyle that I might want to, you know. So I think it's about you know, what we hold dear to us, and what we, you know, whether it's a hobby or not, it's something that, you know, we're spending a lot of money on, and she might be interested in something a little bit, you know, different. So
in two bits I'll quickly add in if Levi's is true and looser fits do in fact become more popular, I think that combined with higher rise jeans will mean that brands are better able to bring jeans to market that women who want to buy raw denim can relate to. So like it might be that now is a great time for women's raw denim to kind of catch on. I really hope that's the case. One other thing I'd mentioned too is at the last Global Denim Hang, our friend Amanda, who's 23ounce.indigo on Instagram, and a bunch of other women in raw denim did a 1 hour chat called the Selvage Sisters Chat. So if you go to the Global Denim Hang YouTube, you can watch the recruiting of, the recording of the Selvage Sisters chat, which was just a bunch of different women in the hobby. And there's also another chat, as you guys mentioned, about CMB denim, Charles Miller brand, and their ladies fit coming to market. So there's some good stuff there on YouTube to kind of help get you excited about women and raw denim and growing that part of the hobby. Cool. I guess maybe given time, I don't know, should we maybe touch base on one more from the list and then call it a day?
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yep.
Cool. I guess maybe the next one worth mentioning, I'm just kind of going from most votes to least votes, is around Japanese brands not making stuff that's Western size friendly. So essentially everything you buy Japanese wise is going to be one size smaller than what you expect. So like I'm a US medium, but if I buy Japanese clothes, I have to buy a Japanese large or a size 3 normally.
Or even two sizes sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I'm 6'2". And so I know instantly if I buy anything Japanese that the rise or the length might not be good enough for me because of my height. So I won't buy anything online that's Japanese normally. I usually have to try it on to see if it's going to be tall enough, essentially. But it sounds like there's a similar problem for a lot of guys around just needing like, you know, more American-sized garments or British-sized garments.
I think there are brands who cater, and I think the Japanese brands are slowly changing those because the Western market is becoming more, you know, influential for them. There's brands who sizing work, you know, good for guys who are bigger. Talking from experience, like TCB Warehouse, their sizing is pretty good, and you can pretty much stick to true to size with them. And obviously they have good measurements available. So yeah, I don't necessarily be put off by going with Japanese brands, but yeah, there are certain brands who will be a little bit smaller. Like I think PBJ, for example, they're a little bit smaller than some of the other brands.
Yep.
So that's something to be aware of.
It's just a matter of making sure you check read the measurements thoroughly and not going off the tag size, which is a common mistake. I mean, the counter argument is you could say, why don't Western brands make sizing that caters for, Japanese and, kind of Southeast Asian builds as much? You know, it's where they're from. Those brands will always make, they'll cater to the home market first. And for the most part, they will fit us. You just have to accept that you might not be wearing a medium. You'll be wearing a large or an extra large. Ilya and I are with things like Ironheart flannels. I know I've got to go up to an extra large, could sometimes go a little bit higher. It's kind of offending people's sense of vanity. Oh, I'm having to wear an XL. Big deal. It's only a top.
Yeah, it's not sure. Really an XL.
Yeah. It's that brand's decision to do that. I mean, it's the same with, it happens with women's dresses and the sizing around different brands, with vanity sizing. Obviously, in this case, it's not. It's more to do with kind of geographical location and sizing. But, my wife could go to a shop and buy a dress. She goes, well, I'm normally, like a size 10. Goes in, buys a size 10, and actually it fits more like a size 12 or even a size 14 for what she believes the size 10 to be in comparison because of the vanity sizing. Different brands will size ever so slightly differently. Read the measurements and this will, you'll learn to get away around it. And just also accept some brands you'll just not fit into. I know I'll never fit into a pair of PBJs on their jeans, and I'll probably never fit into a pair of Rogue Territory jeans. It's just because of the way I'm built. How I can live with that.
Yeah, two more things to add there. One is in the first episode of Ironcast, Giles talked a lot about having to work with Haruki to develop sizes and develop cuts that were Western friendly. So he actually went into the business part of it. He's like, our market share was this, US, UK sales, sizes, et cetera. Like, this didn't fit. So he actually like went into the business behind it. So that's a fantastic way of seeing how a brand did solve that problem. But yeah, I think the other issue here is people just saying that like brands have a cutoff point and the size they need is bigger than that cutoff point. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, just, you know, Japanese isn't all it's cracked up to be. I mean, sure, it's great and it's amazing, but it's not the be all end all. So like, if you can't find Japanese brands that fit your side, screw it, buy European, buy American. There's amazing brands to be had. And then one other thing to mention is, look at the designer of the brands. Like, you can kind of tell a lot about how something's going to fit by who designed it. So like RGT stuff is slim and skinny because Carl, the owner of RGT, is tall and skinny. So look at the designer and you'll probably be able to tell, roughly speaking, how something might be designed for. Because often designers design for themselves first and then their customers second. I guess any other comments on that one, or should we wrap up for today?
I'm all good.
Awesome. So I guess one thing to leave you guys with is just a really funny comment that someone mentioned. So someone posted on our Instagram that they wear the same jeans every day. And so their colleagues at their office thought they were poor, felt bad, and bought them a pair of Levi's, which is amazing. Yeah, in great. So many ways. So I had to kind of mention that.
Was it like, these aren't salvage?
Like when you get a Christmas jumper, you're like, oh.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Great.
Yeah, back of the wardrobe.
But anyways, thanks everybody for listening to our 10th episode. We appreciate your continued support. Please again, rate and review us wherever you get your podcast. Follow us on Instagram, Sons of Selvage Podcast. Email us, sonsofselvagepodcast@gmail.com. Again, we're here to share our knowledge and answer any questions you might have. We want to help everybody get into the hobby. So thanks everyone again for your support and listening.
See you
guys.
Thank you guys. Bye. Bye-bye. Cool.